south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Well, you know, things happen. When I was at the seminar, I told my cleaning lady to clean my room, you know, my desk where I have all my little clippings and doodlings and scribblings, and guess what? She did. And now, wouldn't you know it, I can't find anything. Actually, I can find everything, but it's all in the wrong place and shuffled in with everything else. Meanwhile, I'm still wading through a pile of clippings and notes that she threw in the garbage. But on a positive note, I discovered a lot of little things I never was able to get to. So in the next few shows, I'm going to speak about some quite interesting items that I forgot all about as they work their way deeper and deeper into my pile of both useless and excellent garbage. And you know, on occasion I get emails from people saying, Johnny, are you going to ever run out of things to talk about? Well, if right now I never ever got away from the desk I'm sitting at doing the show, I'd say without ever seeing anything new or getting out my boots on the ground, I've got a full year or more of wild and crazy Latin goings on to blather about. So nope, contrary to what some people might think, I'm not ever at a loss of things to talk about concerning Latin America or anything else. Now, speaking of maids and cleaning ladies, listen to what this article from a recent Pan-American news journal says. More than 80% of the household help in Latin America are ladies and young teenagers that come directly from the rural areas. And once established in the household, more often than not, labor 12 hours or more a day, 7 days a week. Yep, the life of a cleaning lady is pretty tough. In fact, if you recall, I mentioned some time ago that probably 90 to 95% of rural homes, that is mostly indigenous and poor communities, they do not have washing machines. They wash all the clothes and the dishes too in that big basin outside called a pila, P-I-L-A. It's very much like the cement or plastic wash basin you have in the basement next to your own washing machine up there in Cleveland. Only here in Latin America, they don't have basements. That said, most maids and cleaning ladies are so accustomed to using the pila and washing things by hand, they prefer it over a washing machine, which many of them, by their own admission, are afraid of using. By the way, most maids and cleaning ladies will tell you they can wash clothes better than a washing machine, and I believe they can. That means if you hire a maid and you're the first boss that had an actual working washing machine, you'll have to train her how to use the thing and get her over the fear of using it. I can't tell you how many middle, lower middle class, even upper middle class Latin homes I've been through that have one, even two dead and rusted old washing machines sitting in the laundry room or outside by the pila. In fact, expat Eddie once told me that his washing machine had been broken for a month or two and he never even knew it. The maid just kept washing the clothes by hand in the pila. It was no stretch for her. In fact, she rather preferred washing them that way. The odd thing was she never alerted Eddie that it was broken. Turns out she was afraid he'd blame her for breaking it. She probably did, who knows. But let's get back to the fact that so many Latin households have a broken washing machine stuck in a corner somewhere. Yes, you could say Latins are the quintessential hoarders. They save everything, and when something's broke, they fix it over and over again. Yep, and even when things can't be fixed anymore, they'll hold on to them forever. That's part of the reason Latins think that gringos are so wasteful. We throw things away just because we don't like the way they look anymore, or because fashions change, or it's last year's model. By the way, I believe our own casual attitude towards our own possessions does, in some cases, become an excuse for household petty crime. You remember the story I told where a worker stole a radio, and when he got caught, he said, "But you have two radios, and I don't have any, and you don't listen to either of them." Point taken, but still not right. Now, to make things worse, I clearly remember driving through many upscale Chicago neighborhoods where perfectly good dining room tables, chairs, sofas, lamps, TVs, even stereos were sitting out on the front lawn waiting for garbage pickup. Down here, that does not happen. The point is there are a lot of rusted and busted old washing machines in many, many Latin homes that just can't be fixed anymore, but neither will they get thrown away. So stuff does tend to pile up in Latin homes. Which brings me back a slight reprise to that letter I read on the last show from that upset young Latin lady living in the States asking me if there was anything about Latinos that I liked or found admirable. Now, bear with me and follow this line of thinking. If Latins are very, very hesitant to throw anything away, and they appear like hoarders to us, if and when they make it up to the States, they bring those habits with them. We'd call them bad habits because their yards get filled up with junk up in the States, and we say, what's wrong with them? Why don't they clean up their own neighborhoods? Well, again, that's because old habits die hard, and that's what they used to do in their own neighborhoods in Latin America. They didn't have much. They repaired everything, so rarely threw anything away, which has its advantages when you live in a third world country, but when you do it up in the first world, well, your neighborhood turns to crap, and washing machines, chairs, sofas, and cars start accumulating, and there goes the property values. All right, just a little social commentary and meandering there. But back to this article about domestics, cleaning ladies, and maids. Along with the fact that it says most cleaning ladies and domestics work 12 hours or more a day, this little labor profile says the average cleaning lady only has a third or fourth grade education, and that most all of them left their home in the rural areas to, one, either supplement the income of the family, or two, they've left because of interfamiliar violence due to an abusive or alcoholic male in the family. And it says the ones that left because of family violence often have very low self-esteem, and possibly the main reason why they often become no more than indentured servants to the new family they live with and work for. Then it adds, after a while, many maids and domestics begin to resent their employers, looking for a way out. And that next step, a way out, and minimum wage, which is more money than they can make as a domestic, is to work at one of the big maquilas or factories. And many do. That's the next step. However, after finding that piecework is hard, laborious, and often without a break, a good percentage of them end up returning to domestic service as maids and nannies, often stating that when they work as a domestic, they have alone time, something they almost never have at factories or maquilas where they're always busy. Then the article says no matter how low the remuneration as a domestic servant, there's no shortage of food, so they do eat well. By the way, in most cases, there is no minimum wage requirement for domestic servants unless you contract a maid from a legit maid service. So the vast majority of domestics make less than minimum wage and are off the books. But of course, if they live in, they get room and board. And if they don't, you still supply the meals. Now, I can tell you from my own experience that almost all of them will pilfer a little bit of food to take home to the kids or extended family at home, which for gringos is always a point of contention. When you catch a maid stealing potatoes or laundry detergent or even toilet paper, it's still stealing. And you got to wonder if you keep them on, if they're going to graduate to bigger and bolder things. And you know, for a while, I thought a decent solution to that problem before it got out of hand would be just to say, if you need a little extra food at home, just ask me. I'll give it to you. Though I have to say, in my experience, I have mentioned that to all of them. However, it seems they're too proud, embarrassed, or introverted to ever actually ask. Now, that's not to say I haven't had a maintenance guy or cleaning lady who asked me for 20 or 25 bucks because there was a sick kid or uncle or grandma in the house. In that case, no problem. Happy to oblige. Now, of course, they've always asked for that extra money as an advance on their wages, but I never hold them to that. Speaking of asking for an advance on their wages, yep, that'll happen on occasion, but usually with younger workers, not the old steady ones. And believe me, that can really get out of hand. In fact, just recently, my cleaning lady asked for a $40 advance because she got her cell phone stolen on a chicken bus. And I said, here, you can have 25 bucks for a cheap, dumb phone like I use. That's good enough. But you know, cleaning ladies, maids, and gardeners all want a phone with a nice big screen. Certainly the younger ones do. Though again, not the old steady ones. They're just happy to have a phone. Yep, a somewhat smartphone with a big screen. That's what the under 30 crowd wants, even if it costs a week or two of their wages. Hey, you can't fight progress if you want to call that progress. Oh, that reminds me, a little story I forgot to tell when I was talking about getting your car repaired, painted, body work, whatever. Now, I mentioned over and over again that you're going to get dings, bangs, bumps, and all kinds of scratches on your car, mostly because Latins have personal space problems and parking lots are tighter than you've ever seen up in the States. Anyway, there will come a time because of your gringo perfectionist instincts, or let's just say when you'll reach your level of visual discomfort, You'll say enough is enough, and you will send your car to the body shop because you just can't stand looking at the dings and scratches anymore. For me, that happens about every year and a half. Anyway, about 3 years ago, I sent my car to the body shop, had two whole sides repainted perfectly for around $300. And when I picked up the car, I noticed on the trip meter, the guy had put 600 kilometers on my car. Now, he had it for about 4 or 5 days, but my mistake, you see, was letting him have it on a weekend. Turns out, the guy used it for joyriding or going out to the lake or the ocean or whatever. I mean, come on, 600 kilometers, that's 400 miles he put on my car. Had I not pushed the reset button on the odometer, you know, for your trip length, I would have never known. Then again, maybe I shouldn't have pressed that button. Sometimes you're better off not knowing, right? Wasn't it Hemingway that said, "Happiness in intelligent people is the rarest thing I know." Maybe that's why he killed himself, huh? So that's a little hint to you. When you drop up your car at the local body shop, hit the trip button. Better yet, tell the guy you hit the trip button. Then take note of the actual mileage or kilometers, because he could hit the trip button too and set it back to zero, right? Anyway, you have to lay some laws down, because remember, the average guy with a body shop does not even own his own car. Unless, of course, you go to one of those dealer body shops or one of those high-end ones. Then you're going to pay nearly gringo prices anyway. Why do that when the corner guy with the lean-to shed and the gravel floor can do it for a third of the price? Okay, one final thing about maids, domestics, and cleaning ladies. Because their Latin bosses often take advantage of them, pay them late, treat them badly, not to mention a lot of sexual abuse with male bosses and much younger cleaning ladies. In fact, that's the basis of many soap opera storylines, by the way. Aside from that, the cleaning lady often becomes a surrogate mother to the kids, which is why when she quits or gets fired, the kids will often cry and complain and mope around for a couple weeks. That said, you can surely guess why maids and domestics really prefer working for gringos. For one thing, we were brought up in the States where there really is no definitive class system like they have in Latin America. The exception being the malignant pusbag political class. However, ignoring those flatulent sociopaths for a moment, most of us gringos treat our domestic help like real people and bond with them. In fact, if they're with us long enough, they really do become part of the family. Not to mention, I know of a few older gringos who put their maids, cleaning ladies, gardeners, etc., in their wills, setting them up nicely for the future. And I'll tell you, that almost never happens when they have a Latin boss. So yes, as a rule, Latins love working for gringos. You'll find that's a fact only on or near the gringo tourist trail. When off the gringo tourist trail, there just aren't any gringos around for them to have developed an attitude or opinion like that. So bottom line, give them a job, treat them nice, give them extra stuff, and put them in your will. Okay, changing gears a bit here. People always want to know what kind of business opportunities present themselves when they get down here to Latin America. Whether you need to make money or not, you're going to have a lot of time on your hands. And sooner or later, almost always sooner, those business ideas will begin percolating. What about business ideas here in Latin America? Well, at my last Expat Insider Seminar, I can tell you I heard dozens of great gringo business ideas thanks to boots on the ground. And that's the key. For example, one interesting, very low-budget idea I heard from one attendee at the seminar was the idea of giving call center seminars. Because, you know, almost everyone who knows just a tiny bit of English would love to work at a call center because they can make from $400 to $600 a month. That would be twice the minimum wage or more, and you get to sit down in a nice office all day. However, there's one big problem. When people apply for the call center jobs, their English has to be at least 50 or 60%, or they won't take them on because it takes too much to train them up to 80 or 90%. That's the level necessary for a call center person. However, now imagine a gringo setting up a call center training school. In other words, they're marketing to Latins with the dream of working at a call center. Basically, the idea is to train them up and polish off their rough edges, teach them how to be polite on the phone, sort of like pre-law or pre-med, only this would be pre-call center school. Basically, teach them gringo phone manners, including that special couple of hundred words they'll need to know to do any kind of call center interactions with first world people. And of course, they'll get a big, fat, oversized, framed diploma in English. And then the gringo with that idea said the first thing he would do would be to visit call centers and make a deal to funnel his successful graduates to those call centers for a commission. So he'd make money at the front and the back end. By the way, call centers are offering a $500 bonus if you qualify and sign on with them. So they'll pay all right. The thing is, it would take almost zero startup capital. Just put up a snazzy advert on those famous grocery store bulletin boards. This time, not in the high-end upper-middle-class areas, but in the lower-middle-class and, well, the salt-of-the-earth neighborhoods, where there are hordes of people who speak 50 or even 100 words of English and would love to have a call center job. Sure, it would take a lot of work and organization, but almost no capital. How's that for an idea? All right, changing gears again, here's another loose end. You know, I get people asking me all the time about homesteading, you know, setting up their own piece of land, going off the grid and all that. You longtime listeners know I always keep my eye out for real estate deals like that. And so I often take a look at my favorite site, OLX.com. They got deals on practically everything. That's the local Latin Craigslist, by the way, OLX.com. And I'm looking at fincas, which are farms for sale, just to give you an idea if you want to live quite out in the boonies and have a big spread. This is San Agustin. It's a lemon finca or lemon farm in production. 30 acres, 300 producing trees right now, along with a variety of other fruit trees, it says. It's got a river flowing through it and a small house. $100,000 negotiable. So figure it out. 30 acres, 100 grand, that's $333 an acre. And the fact that he says negotiable, well, that means you can knock it at least 20 to maybe 30% off the price, maybe more. Because remember, most people can't get financing down here. You show them the cash and you're in the driver's seat. By the way, when you're looking to homestead and you see some land and it says there's a house on it, most often these are very rustic farm-style houses that are in need of a complete overhaul. In fact, most of the time the structure will serve as a barn and you'll have to build your own house. The problem you see is out in the boonies, they've got a lot of forest and they cut down the trees to build the structures and that stuff doesn't last. Always remember that the preferred building technique in Latin America is block and cement and rebar. Sure, you can put all kinds of hardwood details in it, but the basic structure has to be block, brick, concrete, and rebar, or the place is just going to slowly deteriorate. So again, back to this 30-acre farm that's for sale. You can pick up the whole thing, I'm sure, for maybe 60 to 75 G's. So if you like living out in the boonies, off the grid, there are thousands of places like that. Now, I don't mean that there's not electricity or water or utilities to that place. It's just that the ultimate goal of everyone should be to get off the damn grid. What's not to like about being 100% self-sufficient, huh? However, if you live down here in a gated, guarded community somewhere away from a big city, especially in the Altiplano, if that's where you choose to live, you won't have a heating or air conditioning bill. And even in worst case, if your power goes out for a long, long time, you could have a generator like I do, or solar. In addition, get yourself a very big cistern and collect a ton of rainwater. You know, the rainy season is unbelievable down here. By the way, you'll hear stories from people who are 15 or 20 miles away from a medium or big city. They'll tell you, as far as the stability of the electric grid, it might go down once or twice a year for 8 or 10 hours, not because the power company is lax. They're all pretty much privatized now, so the infrastructure is very good. It's just that, you know, there are hurricanes here in Latin America, and the rainy season brings some big storms. That said, every power outage in my neck of the woods has always been because a tree has fallen on a power line or a transformer. Then you dial up that emergency number on your electric bill, and depending on how many power lines were wiped out by trees or whatever, they will get to you usually within a couple hours. However, just be aware there will be a couple of electric power outages a year that last more than a few hours, and perhaps a couple a month that are just momentary. A half a minute or so. Now, those are no big deal, but as for the ones that last a few hours, you can do what I do. Get a small gas generator, $300 or so, and 2 5-gallon jerry cans. You longtime listeners know that I broadcast many shows from out in the coffee fields, at least 30 miles from the nearest big city limits. And I'm all set with my little gas generator and 2 5-gallon tanks of gas. To give you an idea how often I have to use that little setup, in 5 years I've used less than half of one of those 5-gallon cans, about a gallon and a half. That'll give you an idea of just how stable the electric grid is here. Yep, it's pretty stable. Except in Belize, the Dominican Republic, parts of Brazil, and all of Venezuela. Yep, they still get weekly, sometimes daily, power outages. And you just have to deal with it. Now, as for me, I'm looking to get off the grid in the next year or so. I'm just waiting for that next generation of storage batteries. You know, we're still using lead-acid batteries. That's 100-and-something-year-old technology, sure. They've had some meaningful strides, like, for example, they don't have liquid sulfuric acid in the batteries anymore. That's been replaced with a gel. So if the battery flips over, cracks, or something happens, it won't leak. And you don't have to vent them. They don't produce gas, so you don't have to put them in an open space. But still, it's old lead-acid technology. And as for the new lithium-ion stuff they use in the Tesla cars, there are some problems with those kind of batteries in solar systems. Those batteries are very delicate and need to have a specialized charge and discharge rate. Unlike the traditional lead-acid batteries that can take tons of abuse, and lithium-ion batteries, though much more power-dense per weight, they're about 5 times as expensive and easy to damage, unless you've got some very sophisticated charge and discharge electronics. However, new solar battery technology is right here, right around the corner. And that's what I'm waiting for. I'm ready when they are. All right, changing gears again. Occasionally, the question comes up, what about funerals and cemeteries in Latin America? I don't know about you, but I'm going to live forever. But for those who aren't, well, believe it or not, there are some desperate sellers of funeral crypts, too, if you can believe that. I guess, like up in the States, some people plan ahead and buy plots and funeral services like an insurance policy. And when they get overextended, they have to sell something, and that's an easy thing to sell. Like, for example, I pulled this little ad off one of those famous grocery store bulletin boards. It says, and I'll translate, Los Parques Cementario. For sale, 7 cemetery spaces. Including 3 crypts and 4 osarios. By the way, they're talking about those above ground little funeral crypts, the ones that look like a little ornate stone gingerbread house. You know, like Forest Lawn Cemetery in Hollywood, where they stack people up quite high. Anyway, they want $3,000 for those 7 spaces. Of course, it says negotiable. Yeah, it's always negotiable here. Plus, it says it includes 1 complete funeral service. Then it gives the name of the funeral home. It's called Capillas Señorales. So I wonder, compared to what funeral crypts and funeral services cost in the States, how does that stack up? Stack up. Unfortunate choice of words there. But again, in most every Latin city, there are a number of funeral homes and cemeteries. Depends if you want to go to a high-class funeral home or get buried in a stately park or in a run-down, kind of scruffy neighborhood cemetery. You know, with a lot of overgrown plants and litter and dog poop and stuff. Of course, it shouldn't matter when you're dead, but, you know, it's all about the living and what they prefer to do with you, right? A lot of social pressure there. Let's face it, no one wants to give their loved ones a crappy send-off, do they? As for me, when I'm gone, I don't care if they make dog food out of me. After all, when you die, you end up on some microscopic critter's menu, don't you? By the way, just looked it up, the average cost for a funeral in the States is from $7,000 to $10,000, and the average cost for a casket, $2,000. So again, Latin America is the place you want to be if you plan on croaking anytime soon. However, it seems cremation costs are around the same as they are up in the States, from $1,000 to $1,500, because, well, up till very recently, you could hardly find any funeral that would cremate people. Being Latin America's 98% Christian, and Christians don't believe in cremation. And for Catholics, it's strictly forbidden. But lag time has a way of creeping in, even with cremations. Though you don't see it advertised, most funeral homes can arrange to have it done. By the way, there are some low-budget neighborhood funeral homes where I see they advertise a complete funeral for around $300. Shamans, driveway chickens, piñatas and all. My kind of party. Okay, let's make another U-turn. You've heard of Santa Ana, California, haven't you? Did you know that Santa Ana, California is now officially 78% Latino? Now, this comes from a Sunday news op-ed piece in a big Latin American newspaper. It's in Spanish, of course, and it says, get this. It doesn't matter that this region of California has 78% Latinos. It's still a city where Latinos find it's difficult to advance. In fact, it's quite evident. For example, it says a quarter of the population, 25%, are considered to be living below the poverty line, whereas in the rest of the states, it's 15% or below. Then they cite another discouraging statistic. It says 8% of Latinos living in Santa Ana have a university degree, compared to nearly 40% of working Americans in the rest of the United States. Then it says, because of this large demographic group, they control the election of the current mayor. They elected a man named Miguel Pulido, whose family, the article says, immigrated from Mexico City in 1961, indocumentados. You know what that means, right? Then the article ends by saying, now we've finally done it. There's a case in the U.S. where the majority has been converted by the minority. Okay, speaking of voting with your feet, there is an old saying, you buy fire insurance before the fire, not after it. Which is why, if you're waiting to sign up for my next Expat Insider Seminar, which will probably be right after the 4th of July in 2017, meanwhile, you can't do much better than to go to expatplanb.com and sign up for my new Expat Essentials course and get rolling on your own Plan B. Yep, you'll eventually have to get boots on the ground, but in the meantime, you really have to get that plan started. That's expatplanb.com. You owe it to yourself to check it out. Okay, and last but not least, if you remember in a show I did a couple weeks ago, I mentioned now that Ecuador seems to be filling up with quite a few gringos. The Ecuadorian government is starting to stick them with a lot of brand new taxes because they know it's the gringos, not the locals, who have the money. And one good friend, an Expat Insider Seminar repeat offender, Michael, who lives in Ecuador, way off the gringo tourist trail, I might add, good for him, he says, Johnny, whatever you say about Ecuador, do please just say something good about the ease of transportation there. The buses are clean and safe, they're on time, and the highways are in great shape. No potholes and multiple repair sites. Well, Mike, thanks for that, and I do have to add, no matter what Latin country you live in, even if it's gringo saturated, like Costa Rica, Panama, Mexico, and a few others, you can still find some very cool off-the-tourist trail places to set up your household. Just remember, the closer you are to a gringo population, the higher your cost of living. You've got the gringos themselves bidding up prices and pusbag government lard-ass crooks passing legislation aimed at digging more and more into your pocket as well.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.